You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, feminist-fired radio brought to you by CKUT and the 2110 Center for Gender Advocacy. The Dragon Root has two genders and symbolizes the diversity of every body and every mind on the gender spectrum. Tune in every Tuesday morning from 8:39 on 90.3 FM or ckut.ca/listen. You can also pick up and choose from our archives at center2110.org. We bring you reports from the Blueprint Radio Project on gendered violence, live tunes from feminists, queer, trans, and gender-aware musical guests, and interviews about a wide array of social justice issues examined through a gender-perceptive lens. Today on Dragon Root, we're bringing you part two of our series on Roma. Dragon Root contributor Michael Armstrong had the chance to speak with Frank Sigo, a professor of political science in Budapest, who has done work with the Open Society Institute on issues of Roma social integration in Hungary. We spoke with Sigo on the experience of the Roma in Hungary before and after the transition from communism, domestic politics, and how the rising power of Jobbik is affecting Roma in Hungary. Later on in the show, we'll have a quick piece of a Stella worker who gives us an overview of Stella's mandate, services, goals, and projects. But first up is Michael Armstrong with Frank Sigo.
You noted that Jobbik is an opposition party to Fidesz.
On paper, yeah.
On paper. But George Dalos, a writer and political biographer, was quoted as saying that there's no longer any clear boundaries between the thinking of Fidesz and Jobbik. And I'm wondering if you can shed some light about how some of the platforms of Jobbik have bled over into mainstream politics.
Okay, one of the party platforms that Jobbik had in the 2010 elections was what they call differentiated education for Roma children.
Okay.
Meaning, essentially, segregated classrooms or segregated schools. Of course, they wouldn't come out and announce that they wanted Roma children to fail. But that's one thing that the Fidesz administration has begun to embrace. They've made attempts now to change the law on equal treatment and the education laws to make it possible to initiate sort of Roma catch-up classrooms. So that's quite clearly a discriminative and probably quite damaging move that Jobbik proposed in 2010, and now Fidesz looks like it's supporting.
And how has the recent rise of the Jobbik party impacted social relations between the Roma community and the Hungarian state itself?
Well, I guess the simplest level to look at this would be the local levels, the level of towns and villages. Jobbik has Jobbik's located several towns where they feel Roma and Hungarian tensions are high. And what they've done is mobilized some groups that support Jobbik, some of them actually quite paramilitary, to stage demonstrations and parades in a quite threatening manner in these towns. So essentially marching what I would describe as skinheads through Roma parts of these villages. That obviously can't lead to any improvement in Roma hyphen Hungarian relations.
One particular event that I'd like you to talk about, what happened in the town of Gyöngyösvárta. Could you describe a little bit about what happened there in March of 2011?
Yeah, Gyöngyösvárta is really a good example of the kind of thing I referred to before, where for certain reasons, I don't recall the precise reasons, but the level of tension between the Roma community and the Hungarian community was quite high. You should also know that the Roma in many Hungarian settlements live in a quite segregated manner. So they would live on a separate street or maybe even outside the official boundaries of the town. So paramilitary-styled groups, Jobbik-supported groups, did arrange a show of force in this town. Another paramilitary group stated that it would hold training, paramilitary training, right outside the Roma area of the town. This led to quite a lot of tension. Police were called in, some rock throwing and such. A Jobbik candidate won the mayoral election in that town. Now, since then, I haven't heard of any atrocities in the town of Gyöngyösvárta. But these kinds of demonstrations have spread to a few other Hungarian cities and towns in the meantime. So it looks like that was a successful maneuver by Jobbik to get one of their people into the leading position on the town council. And it's something they've attempted to do in other municipalities.
And what kind of coverage did this incident receive in the Hungarian press and media? If any.
Oh, quite extensive coverage. A lot of television, a lot of newspaper reporting. So that's not something that anyone was able to hide. I don't think anyone would have even tried. Clearly, any publicity on that event would be good publicity for Jobbik. It would be the kind of action that would appeal to Jobbik supporters.
Yeah. What was the level of tone of media coverage, would you say?
I'd say it was quite nasty. A number of opposition politicians did go visit the town of Gyöngyösvárta, and the level of discourse after those events was not the sort of level-headed, policy-centered discourse one would hope for in a 23-year-old democracy. A lot of mudslinging. I would say a lot of leaning toward racism.
I wonder, has the events in towns like Gyöngyösvárta, how has that impacted the level of refugee requests by the Roma in order to emigrate out of Hungary?
Well, waves of Roma emigration have come and gone in the past 15 years or so. So in the late 1990s, there would have been a similar wave. Past two or three years has seen a cresting of a new wave. And absolutely, I think the appearance of paramilitary groups in towns, the unwillingness of police to stop the paramilitaries, the police and courts to stop the paramilitaries from marching, would be grounds to lay claim to refugee status in immigration courts. It would show the unwillingness or inability of the state to protect minority communities. So absolutely it would lead to an increase in those kinds of migrations.
Thank you.
Hungary's Human Resources Ministry maintains that, quote, Hungary is a democratic constitutional state that observes human rights, and anyone who seeks political asylum in any country, referring to a, quote, quasi-fascist dictatorship, does not speak the truth. Now, when you have the official Hungarian line being that, complemented by the Harper government attempting to frame Roma refugees as seeking to exploit Canadian resources, and then delegitimizing the very real social and cultural and economic marginalization of the Roma community, what choices then do the Roma community have if they don't feel safe within Hungary?
The refugee claims have to be balanced between two approaches, one being a case-by-case approach and one being a country-by-country approach. Case-by-case approach would entail the ability of the claimant to prove that the state is not doing all it can to protect a given claimant. For Canada to make blanket statements about Roma refugee claims is a dangerous and probably unjust path. Now, regarding the government statements, Fidesz statements about the democratic nature of Hungary, to a large degree, I have to agree that Hungary has a rule of law. It's been tampered with recently, but I think that happens in other countries as well. Hungary has a quite complex system of legal mechanisms to protect people, to protect minorities. The question is, do the minorities have the resources, the knowledge, and the ability to make use of those mechanisms? And that seems to be where Hungary is failing. There is not a functional legal aid system to provide legal representation to people who are claiming that they've been treated unjustly. There's difficulty in accessing legal protection when skinheads begin to appear on your streets. And as such, emigration to countries that are willing to hear your case is a rational option. If Canada closes those options, then the Roma in Hungary are not left with many countries that would hear out refugee claims. The United States doesn't seem to be a target kind of country for refugee claimants from Hungary, probably because of stricter arrangements in the United States. Roma migration out of Hungary is also geared toward Western Europe, countries that are EU members that have opened their labor markets to Hungarian labor, including the United Kingdom, now including France, Germany, Spain, and so on. In those countries, there's a larger arrival of Roma from other EU states, including Romania and Bulgaria, where the plight of the Roma is much more dire than it is in Hungary, and from non-EU states, like I would highlight Kosovo, where the situation for the Roma is among the worst in Europe. My hope would be that Roma in Hungary are able to better organize with the help of non-Roma, with the help of the state, to strengthen the NGOs that they currently have and that currently function, strengthen them, improve their funding situation, improve their level of expertise, their access to expertise in order to defend the Roma here in Hungary. I think it should be a goal to make sure that all Hungarian citizens feel safe in their own country, that they don't feel the need to claim refugee status in other countries, whether that's politically motivated or motivated by welfare concerns.
If, on the one hand, you have the Hungarian state, which is claiming that the Roma community has resources that they're not taking advantage of that would ensure protection and then thereby eliminating a claim for refugee status. How, in the context of Ottawa's decision to spend $13,000 on an advertising campaign in Hungary, on billboards and bus shelter and radio advertisement campaigns that are meant to deter would-be applicants to Canada by saying that quote, the immigration system here has changed and people with unfounded claims will be sent home faster. I want to know how the move by Canada's government to clamp down on Roma immigration on the basis of refugee claims is affecting the Roma community in Hungary, which is feeling under threat, but because the government doesn't recognize it as such, feel
right,
like...
Right. Okay, I haven't seen numbers of migration numbers for the past year or so. So that ad campaign, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was run last summer in a couple of towns, one of them being the city of Miskolc, the third biggest city in the country. I haven't seen migration numbers since that campaign was run. Whether that campaign has tarnished the image of Canada within the Roma community, I can't tell you. I don't have information on that. I can tell you that it split opinion in the press, and it split opinion on social media as well. Some people claiming that Canada was doing the right thing, Canada was laying down the law. Other people saying, well, this is an unjust thing to do. Those claims should be heard in Canada and not in Hungary. I had a mixed opinion at the time. The Canadian government has its budget, and it should spend its budget as it pleases. I don't think it was a tasteful way to go about this. I think a tasteful way to disseminate information on the Canadian immigration system would be through NGOs, would be through contact with Roma minority self-governments, would be through contacting Roma community leaders and having discussions with them. I would think that a sort of two-way dialogue would be a much more fruitful approach to this than billboards on the sides of housing estates.
And has there been any backlash against the Roma community as a result of Canada's move and how Roma yeah. refugee claims is then tarnishing Hungary's image abroad?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Michael. I don't think public opinion of the Roma could be much worse. So clearly there are some voices in the public sphere that do claim that the Roma are tarnishing the reputation of the country by claiming refugee status in Canada, for example. But I would say that that's just one grievance of the Hungarian right, of many that they have geared toward the Roma. I don't think that's changed the overall perception of the Roma. I think the Hungarian right is more concerned with how the Western press covers Hungary. It's more concerned about that than it is about actual migration.
Next week, Dragonroot contributor Chloe will continue this series in a conversation with Gina Chan Roba, the executive director of the Roma Community Center in Toronto, for a grassroots perspective on how these changes are directly impacting the Roma community.
Stella works with female, anybody who identifies as a woman while working. So that would be cis women, that would also be trans women, that would be transvestites, or men who don't necessarily identify as any of them, but to work, they dress up, they cross-dress. That's it. We've been around for about 15, 16 years. We are an organization that is by and for. Stella was started by sex workers. To work on the team, you have to have experience in the industry. That is one of our most important things that you write on a CV. People get really excited when they apply to sex work, to Stella, especially if they've been doing sex work for years and years and years, because they're like, oh my God, I get to write. What? So it's pretty fun. Not every single member of our team, like we have hired non-sex workers in the past, but generally we try and keep to that because we find that it's hard to understand what sex work is about unless you have been a sex worker. Our organization, for the most part, we do outreach. And so we go onto the terrain. I'm going to also talk in franglais tonight too, because for some reason I can't speak English even though it's my maternal language. So we go out onto the terrain and do outreach. We are street workers, or like street-based outreach workers, or liaison agents. So what that means is about 80 to 85% of our energy goes to working with street-based sex workers. We do also work with escorts, masseuses, webcam porn, dancers. We work with independent people who are working independently. We work with people who are doing work through agencies. We do have a locale where people can come and chill out, have a cup of coffee. We have all the resources there. We have all of our information. So it's an array of people that we work with. Sex workers are extremely diverse because it is a work, so that means there's a bunch of different people coming through. There's so many different reasons why someone wants to do sex work, and so we see there's also a lot of sex workers, so we see tons of different kinds of people, which is really, really interesting. We do focus on our most marginalized population, which is street-based sex work. I'm going to get into that as I go in terms of why and what's up. So I'm going to explain the services first. We cover two major territories in terms of our street work. So street work means I have a huge backpack. It's filled with prevention material. I have a book on me that's filled with resources, and I have a cell phone. So I'm kind of a working office. My terrain, my territory that I'm responsible for is downtown. So I start at Square Cabot, where Atwater Metro is, and on a Thursday night every week, I walk from Square Cabot, say, to Saint-Hubert. We go up around the hotels, Saint-Hubert, and then we also finish at Saint-Laurent-Saint-Cat. So what I do is I go and I target areas where I know street-based sex workers are working. We also have a team that works in Hochelaga, so we do the exact same thing, but in Hochelaga. And then, yes, we will go to the massage parlors and the escort agents, say hi. We have all of our prevention materials. We have all of our publications, which I will explain. So it's to break isolation. It's to see if anybody needs anything. If someone does need something, then they let me know, and I try and help them obtain their goal. We work with a harm reduction philosophy. So what harm reduction means, essentially, is that I work with what the person presents to me. It is not for me to determine what someone needs. It is for someone to determine what they need. If they can't figure out what they need, then we sit and we figure it out together. But I don't tell them. I don't give directives necessarily, but I wait for them to tell me what's up, and then I find resources. So if someone's like, I need a shelter, I find them a shelter. If someone is working at an agency but wants to work independently, I'm like, okay, so here are the ways that you can do that. Here are the things that you should think about in terms of your security, in terms of your health, etc. If someone wants to exit the industry, then we can also help them kind of figure that out. If someone's been working in the industry for 20 years, she has nothing on her resume, then we can sit down together and I can be like, well, you managed a business, you took calls, you put up ads, you did your own budgets. You know what I mean? So you ran a business, so that's very pertinent. So let's make you a resume. What would you like? Let's talk about education if that's what you want, et cetera, et cetera. That's it. We cover the entire island of Montreal. So if someone calls us from Montreal North and is like, I need to talk to you, then we will displace, we will go to them as well. So we're mobile, which is very important. We have, as I said, a locale, but we also have a listening line. So Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, people can call us, and they, like, if they can't leave. Sometimes at a massage parlor, you're there for 12 hours. So they can't leave, but they have a question. So they can call us, and we can talk to them about whatever. Our resources are there. We're in front of a computer. And we can just listen to them. Sometimes people just need to talk. Sex workers are generally extremely isolated. There's people that exist in their careers, and they can't tell a single person in their life. They lead double lives, and it weighs on them. It becomes really, really intense when your family has no idea what you're doing, when you can't tell your partner. You're scared of being outed and what will happen, losing your children. So sometimes we just listen to people and support them emotionally in terms of what they're going through. We do also have a clinic with Medicine Du Monde. We have a clinic twice a month, so it's a clinic specifically for sex workers. We prioritize people who don't have papers, women who are sans papier, or people who, let's say, are living in the street and they don't—they're not like as necessarily organized, and they don't have their cards. We work with a lot of people who are coming from the north, from Inuit communities, and there is like a transfer of ID, etc. So they might not have their medical card either. So we prioritize people who sans papier. We feel it's extremely important that they have access to medical care. And sex workers work with our bodies, and so we are very preoccupied with secure sex. We have to be in form to be able to work, to be able to make a living, and so we need to offer that service. Medicine Du Monde is an amazing organization. They're non-judgmental. We used to do our street shifts with Medicine Du Monde beside us. We used to go out with the nurses. Now what we do is we work with CSSS Metro, and we work with CSSS Hochelaga. So we actually do... I'm going to close the door because... Okay, thank you. That's just distracting. So we do go... Like, Hochelaga is... there's a lot of sex workers, but it also is a place where there's a lot of consumption as well. So we go into, say, crack houses and shooting galleries with the nurse, and we just make sure that people get safe material in terms of HIV, and Hep B... prevention, and then also to the different health complications that come along with heavy consumption and addiction. It's genius because then having the nurse there breaks down barriers in terms of judgment.
And that's all the time we have for the Tuesday Morning After today, May 14th. So thank you for listening to the show. Please stay tuned to CKUT at 90.3 FM as Bossa Bossa is up next. We'll be right back.